Welcome to the Awe and Wonder podcast. I'm Sarah Kinsella.
And I'm Brenda Del Monte.
And today we're joined by Maria De Leon, who is an SLP in California and has a social media account.
Bilingue AAC.
Great. And so I had known Maria from her account. She has great resources. And then also we had met at the Bridge School CVI AAC Summer Institute. So that was fun. And so that's kind of how we connected. And I thought, Maria, it would be so fun to have you on as we're talking about cultural responsiveness in this series. And I know you post a lot about multiple language learners and a lot of things around this topic. So could you introduce yourself?
Yeah. So I'm Maria De Leon. I'm a speech language pathologist. I'm currently practicing in Southern California, Los Angeles area. Sometimes I go into Orange County. I work for an organization that's nonprofit, and we serve different types of entities. So like regional centers, sometimes we do school districts. So I'm really all over the place. And I do just AAC, AAC evaluations, trials and trainings. So that's kind of like, I specialized only on AAC and I stuck to AAC for a while now. I'm also a co-founder of Bilingue AAC, which you've mentioned, which is a group of four SLPs that created a platform just to sort of, spread information, best practices on bilingual AAC for our culturally and linguistic diverse students. I also manage the account, my personal account, which is Maria De Leon SLP, which I also share a lot of AAC content and also related to bilingualism.
So how did the Bilingue AAC account come about?
Yeah, so this was like about 3 years ago. The girls, it's Alma Partida, Sarah Lee, and Melissa Tapia, and then me, Maria De Leon. We met maybe like 3 years ago through one of the PALS training. I think it's like the PRC platform learning center, but we met through there. We took like the bilingual course, and then Alma Partida, she reached out to us and she wanted more information. I think Sarah Lee and Alma were like talking and they wanted more information on bilingual AAC. And then so Alma was like, oh, I know two great girls that like work with bilingual students and do AAC. So then we like met on Zoom meeting, and then we decided to start this whole project that at first we didn't think it was going to be this this big and long, but at the end, and we saw the need. I feel like there's a lot of need in terms of bilingualism and AAC. So we've been doing presentations. We have our website where we have a lot of resources for parents and teachers and SLPs to work with bilingual students. Now, we've done so much in terms of like reaching out to the AAC community. We've also done like articles with practical AAC.
I saw that you just did one on literacy, right? Bilingual AAC and literacy.
Yeah, we have a year-long one. So we did like, okay, I want to say 5 or 6. The last two were specific to literacy, and those are really good. So I encourage you to go to our website or our Instagram page, and we have it all linked there. So it's sort of like, it just started as like a project to kind of like, one of the Sarah Lee, she wanted to learn a little bit more about bilingualism, and then it turned out into this big thing. And now we, we do presentations and things like that.
I think it might be helpful to start by finding some terms. I know there's code switching and translanguaging and multimodal and bilingual, and where can you set us straight on just what all those terms mean?
Yeah, I want to start by like finding translanguaging.
Okay.
Translanguaging is like a bigger, almost like a philosophy or a way of looking at bilingualism. Under, it's like an umbrella, I like look at it more as an umbrella term. Under translanguaging, you find things like code switching, where, code switching is things like switching from one language to the other. A lot of students tend to do that. They tend to follow grammar rules. So it's typical It's normal for bilingual students. So if I'm like speaking in, you know, there's different types of code switching. You can switch one word, or you can switch half of a sentence, or you can do a sentence and then go into the other language in another sentence. And they tend to follow the grammatical rules of language, depending, you know, either the English or the Spanish. Translanguaging, so code switching is part of translanguaging, but code switching is mostly a way of just being. It's just kind of like how I see it. When you are a bilingual user and also a multimodal communicator, our language center is like, you know, it's big and it has a lot of things. It's not only speaking, right? It's the way that we understand receptive language, the way we express ourselves. And then also includes things like writing and reading. So when we're thinking of translanguaging, is mostly the way that we as a bilingual person processes language. So translanguaging, it's important to have translanguaging practices. For so long, I feel like people, and still now, I feel that a lot of people think that when you are bilingual, you think like in two different ways, right? Like, oh, you're thinking Spanish and you're thinking in English. But in reality, that's not the case. Translanguaging kind of like, it's a new idea where it kind of brings up the, you know, the fact that when we are using the two languages, that is part of our whole language. So it's more of a process rather than like separate structures when we're thinking in Spanish or in English. And when we are doing translanguaging practices or affirming practices in therapy or in education, we want to be aware of our students' cultural background and also language background, because we want to make sure that we set an environment where we are supporting this way of thinking or processing language, which is translanguaging. And we do that by incorporating, you know, like different languages in the classroom, or offering different vocabulary, or even like offering different examples that are related to maybe your students' culture.
So you led me right into the next question, which was, so do you have to be bilingual to treat bilingual children on AAC?
No. So no, I feel like there's like the most important thing with AAC users, and I think also like bilingual users, I've come to realize that a lot of things kind of like overlap, like best practices. Like if you're doing best AAC practices, a lot of those things overlap with like bilingual practices. Mm-hmm. So like the, like being a multimodal communicator, like how does that person learn how to use an AAC system? Well, we have to use the AAC system. So it's the same thing with like, we have to use the AAC system, or the AAC system has to be available, and the environment is what matters more than actually maybe, you know, the device, setting the environment where there's like symbols and the opportunity to learn. So I see translanguaging and including bilingualism the same way with AAC, like just as long as we have the language in our system, right? The other language. And also what if we pull it out and we show how to, maybe if we're talking about some type of concept or like a vocabulary word, that we do it on both languages, and we're kind of setting it up where the child is able to make that connection. We're not necessarily teaching Spanish or the other language, but we are like setting an environment where the individual that is thinking in all of these languages can make that connection. Mm-hmm. So yes, one of the things that a lot of monolingual SLPs feel like, in order for you to do AAC or bilingual AAC with a student, you have to be bilingual. Not necessarily. It would be nice if you're bilingual, because you would have, you know, understanding of grammatical structures if you're creating like a sentence. But other than that, I think like as long as you are presenting and setting an environment for the individual to make those connections, then that's enough. And that's how we as SLPs or teachers who are not speaking the other language can make sure that we're setting an environment where, you know, they can keep expanding their language.
And I think your resources too, I saw, you know, it'll say like, quiero, like it'll give Spanish examples, and then down below it'll say, you know, did you know that there's masculine and feminine for these things? Like, it, there's some information there where it's like, okay, I got to pay attention to do the, does this end in A or does this end in O? That makes sense because I'm in Arizona now and I am exposed, but it's like the Mandarin stuff that you guys have on there is like, I don't, you know, I don't even know how we go about. So I think sometimes even, and the literacy pieces around languages that don't have alphabetic, the alphabet that we know. So there's some languages, I guess, would say that feels easier to do treatment around than others. But I do AAC evaluations, and a lot of times we start by saying what languages are spoken in the home, because we aren't assuming that the language that we walk in with is their home language. We're not assuming that the person that we're interviewing is the only person that might be in the home. And I've done this by mistake. I went and did an eval. We got the device. I was doing training. Dad walked in and he was speaking fluent French. And I didn't know that. And I could have gotten that, you know, now then it was backtrack. And there was nothing to indicate that Dad didn't really speak English. He only spoke French. So I backed up and said, you know, what languages are spoken in the home? And I get going on that. But so many times they say, well, English and Spanish, but we only speak English to him. I mean, we've been told not to confuse him. We've been told, and that seems to me so old school, but it's by their SLP. Sometimes it's doctors too. Well, they're delayed because you speak two languages, which tends to be received often as blame for their child's delay or perceived delay in language. So what do you, just let's start with the basic barrier beyond the concepts around not accepting that it's enriching to have the both languages as opposed to a hindrance.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those myths, right? Like kind of like the AAC right. myths. These are like bilingualism myths. And then you add those two, you have bilingualism myths and AAC myths. When yeah. you're dealing with a family who's like from a different cultural background, it could be really tough. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, similar to the AAC myths, those have been around, we know, decades. The research mm-hmm. says otherwise, you know? So the same thing with bilingualism. I hope that families go out and like maybe get a second opinion with another SLP or I don't know. It's just so hard for me when I hear still SLPs and doctors saying this. But I think that, you know, bilingualism definitely does not hinder speech or delay any speech. Mm-hmm. Actually, we are doing a disservice if we are taking away one of the languages that they understand and they process, mm-hmm. right? Going back to that translanguaging, if the person, it's part of their identity and their life and their culture, they're speaking Spanish or French, and that's the way they process the world around them. And then all of a sudden, we're going to say, no, we're going to take this away. Mm-hmm. We're actually doing a disservice in learning and setting the, you know, a foundation of where we can keep building so language can keep expanding.
Right.
So we're like doing a disservice in that way. And on the other hand, we're also, you know, if English is necessary for school, that's one language, but what happens at home? How is this individual going to communicate at home and in their community? So we're almost like, if we think of quality of life, we're also damaging their quality of life because of environments and their communities all speak their home language, and we decide to take it away, then you know, it becomes harder for them to navigate the world and be successful and somewhat independent once they go out of school. Because, you know, a lot of families, once they transition out of school, the individual with you know, communication difficulties might only know English, and we see this a lot actually with individuals that don't have communication disorders or communication difficulties, just regular bilingual kids, mm-hmm. where, you know, they only speak English and then they kind of lose Spanish. And now they're adults and it's like the mom and the child are like having a conversation, but like the mom speaks in Spanish right. and asks questions in Spanish and then the kid answers in English.
Right.
And somehow they understand each other, but there's still like a disconnect because they can't have like really serious conversations, because you know there's a misunderstanding from maybe the mom that's just like, okay, I know he's saying this, but I don't know what he really means. So it's just this, you know, we're doing a disservice if we decide like, you know, only one language. And then at the end, of course, it goes back to, you know, anti-immigrant sentiments, you know, and that's how it started, actually, the bilingualism and only doing one language, and relating it to being a disorder. It was a lot of the movement of being anti-immigrant, of like, if you're going to come to this country, you need to speak the language, you know, or you need to assimilate to be successful. And that's why a lot of families actually do take that recommendation, because when an immigrant family comes to this country, they want to be successful, and they understand that English is the language, the, you know, dominant language. And in order for their children to be successful, then English has to be spoken. So it's like, you know, it's so big.
I think there's some education with the family, because what I end up saying is, I say, well, do they follow direct? They'll say, well, they don't speak any language. They're not even monolingual. We have no verbal words, period, right? And I'll say, well, do they follow directions in English? Yes. Do they follow directions in Spanish? Yes. Then they already are bilingual, right? Right? They are, their receptive language skills are already bilingual if they're following directions in both languages. And then we usually ask, like, do their siblings speak Spanish, right? And sometimes it's like, no, none of our kids speak Spanish. And it's like, okay, so Spanish is not a prevalent language if none of your children speak Spanish, right? And, but does grandma still take care of him after school every day and she doesn't speak any English, right? It's like, so even though, again, even though the children don't speak it, they're doing what you're saying. They're responding in English to Spanish requests. So it's like, some of it's just just defining kind of what that is for families. Like, it is a bilingual a situation. And then oftentimes when we get the AAC device, and I'm sure you've seen this, they'll like go to the Spanish side to find food, because you know, we've personalized the Spanish side with things that are from their culture. And then they'll go to the English side for things they've learned in school, right? I guess that's code switching too, right? It's interesting to see when you get a device that's bilingual, when the kid chooses to go into the Spanish profile and use certain words, and with whom, right? And they often are in Spanish at home and in English at school, as someone who is with verbal speech would do. So what I feel like is there's no harm in the opportunity to have expressive language in both languages, even if the typical siblings don't do that, because they're already bilingual if they're following directions in both languages.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, even the code switching, it's like part of it, it almost like fits the environment of the student, you know, like it is, you know, the code switching, they're doing it because they see it happen even with their siblings, right? Like the siblings are, if mom is speaking in Spanish and then they speak in English, like how, you know, is that reflected when we use AAC? Then it has to happen with the AAC device as well.
Mm-hmm.
Something that we've also said, you know, in terms of like, that's sort of like as SLPs ourselves, like we don't have to be bilingual to kind of teach those skills of operational skills, right? Of like, oh, look, this is a code switching button. You see here, you go here. And then look, and that's the nice things about like programs. And like you were mentioning earlier, Brenda, about how Spanish is an alphabetic language. So it happens to be really similar to English. Mm-hmm. So it's monolingual SLPs that are working with Spanish bilingual students. They kind of lucked out because it is very similar.
Right.
And a lot of the translation on the AAC programs tend to be pretty good. They're not perfect, but they tend to be pretty good.
Right.
And the location, you know, the fact that they're on the same location, it helps us a lot in kind of going back and forth. Then I think of like, because I also work with other students who speak other languages other than Spanish. Then I'm like, you know, Chinese and Korean. And I'm kind of stuck too. Like, I'm like, okay, well, I don't understand these characters because they're not alphabetic,
right?
And that does not translate nicely. And actually, there's virtually no AAC system that is really kind of good in other languages, like the Asian languages,
Right.
because of this direct translation and how the syntax of maybe Chinese or Korean is not the same syntax order of like English, so it like messes the whole thing up. So I've had parents tell me actually, and that's when I come in with, even though I don't speak the language, I have the knowledge that like they speak a different language, and I am going to incorporate this family as much as I can into the AAC evaluation and also the training, because I don't know what the Korean version looks like or the Chinese version looks like. So that's when a lot of parents kind of tell me like, this doesn't work. Like I'm like, okay, so can you try making a sentence with this program? And I show them like cough drop, for example, and then they try to make a sentence and they're like, no, that doesn't work. We're just stick to English. So in that situation, I have to sort of respect also like, okay, we'll just do the English and then we'll try to like figure out how we can add cultural items on their English version or their English vocabulary. But the culturally affirming practices stay, right? So I'm always thinking, okay, even though this is not, I don't speak the language and I don't understand it, I'm going to add as much as I can with the help of the parents on their device to make it as culturally affirming as I can.
The ways I do that is to have like basically have recorded speech, you know. So if I have a sentence that's like, "Hi, my name is something something," you know, "Hi, my name is Johnny," and they speak Korean, the next one might be the same symbol, and then I don't know, I don't know, I do the label that says, you know, Korean or something, and it's the recorded speech behind that. They're not going to get the written because of the keyboard and all the different things, but at least we're providing that. Some of those social language pieces around with correct pronunciation. Yeah, there's the recorded speech is super limited. You're not going to do that without every single word, you know. And you're right that there's just too many syntax changes. So there are definitely barriers to AAC and bilingualism, but you're right. You're still always making a conscious effort to incorporate both languages.
Maria, you've given us a great framework to think about in the translanguaging, which is a new term for me. So that was really interesting. And I feel like you also have a lot of technical ed expertise, which isn't necessarily completely the focus of, our podcast. We're kind of looking at some of these mind shifts and things. But I do kind of want to ask for people who are like, okay, but how do I do that? What are some of those apps that allow for some of these for many languages, different languages, or what has been helpful for you?
Yeah. So for the languages, actually, Bilingue AAC, if you go to their Instagram page, we have a link tree and there's an Airtable where you can type in like a language like Russian, and then it gives you like all the applications that have Russian, or you can type in like Spanish
Cool.
and it gives you all the applications that have Spanish. The Airtable was created by Diverse AAC, and this was one of their projects a few years back. So that's one way when I try to look at other languages and see what other, what other systems have that language. In terms of Spanish, because I speak Spanish and I'm able to review the vocabulary in Spanish, like, okay, this looks pretty good or this is not pretty good. All the popular, systems that we have now, like the Tobii DynaBox and the TouchChat and the Proloquo to Go, Cough Drop too. All of those are pretty good. The translation in English and Spanish, sort of like I was mentioning earlier, like because the language is so closed, the direct translation kind of works. I do wish that, things were a little bit different, like different types of vocabulary that are specific to that culture. Yes, you can go and edit and add it, but wouldn't it be nice if it was just there? Just kind of like the way that in English, it's like different things are there in different holidays. But that's one thing of that I do with the Spanish. Like I feel safe just using whatever system I choose. I don't necessarily go for like it. Yes, bilingualism is important, but because these popular systems already have like the Spanish, I look into other things, like if the motor planning or the predictive features of like TouchChat. I know editing something like Proloquo to Go is a little bit easier to edit because it's a little bit more flexible of where you edit things. Touch Chat, if you mess with one button, then like messes the other buttons. So you really have to be careful with the editing with Touch Chat. The TD Snap, the motor, that one's pretty good. It's newer, so that one I haven't really worked that much, but that one's kind of nice too. You know, it gives you the ability to have like different topics. So you can keep adding like different folders that are related to that person's culture. But you know, to be honest, you can do that on any system. It's just a matter of you knowing how can I customize this device for an AAC user that's bilingual or from a different cultural background. And then, you know, customization is important for everyone, but especially for, you know, for those families that to speak another language, and incorporating that family into your treatment, incorporate it into the AAC assessment, is really important to kind of like, they're the ones that lead. That's what I found. Like I find that if I incorporate them in the beginning, there's less guessing that I have to do because they're the ones leading me. And I'm like observing of how their like environment is, and that's giving me ideas of what can be added on the system. So this is why, you know, incorporating the family will make your job just a lot easier, I think, if you can. I know that, you know, school districts, you have limited opportunities to kind of talk to parents, but if you do have that opportunity to talk to parents, I would say talk to them, incorporate them, and, you know, get their opinions and their kind of like their ideas of what they think.
Well, you know, that's something that's interesting that you bring that up, because it's like we know the service delivery model is limited in the schools for interaction with families. And that does seem something that we need to advocate for to change for all languages. Even if you're not bilingual, I think we should talk to parents more than once a year at the IEP meeting. But I think that, you know, sometimes we do hear that the AAC device is being used at school. It never goes home, or if it goes home, it's never taken out of the backpack because it's an English device. Do you have any success stories of like kind of breaking through that, like, they weren't using it at home and this is what we did, and now we're cooking with gas?
Yeah. So, you know, I don't work that much. This is why I consider I understand school SLPs and how hard it is to incorporate parents. I'm not a school SLP. I work for a nonprofit organization, and I'm actually, regional centers tend to be really family centered.
Yes.
So I feel very lucky being part of that type of system. But as a school SLP, you know, the other girls at Bilingue AAC, you know, we've had these conversations of like, how can we, like, you know, how can we help school SLPs try to reach out, you know, to parents and incorporate parents when, you know, they have 50, you know, caseload. And yeah, I don't have time to be like meeting with every single parent and talk about AAC training or whatever, but something that they've mentioned, you know, they have a lot of, and we've done our, on our website, we have some of the webinars that we've done. And we talk a lot about the strategies of how can you do that as a school SLP, as simple as like opening a conversation, you know, using things like Facebook or WhatsApp and having like a chat with the parent and just sending like resources, to maybe using like community liaisons within the school to help kind of bridge that gap and talk to parents. If you don't speak, you know, that's another barrier too. Like when you don't speak the language, how are you supposed to communicate with the parent if you don't speak the same language, right? So using community liaisons at your school where, you know, they can be the messenger of information. I like to, you know, because I come from outside of the school district, and we do contract with a lot of school districts, and they tend to be IEEs, right? Like, so they're like independent evaluations. I like to put that on the report and the IEP, the fact of we're going to provide parent and circle of support training, including parents, where we're going to talk about these strategies like modeling or like, you know, maybe some simple programming features if that's what the school allows for the parent to do. I tend to put that on the report, and I've seen other SLPs also included in their IEPs. So I've had other SLPs tell me like, oh yeah, I make sure that I put parent support or training on the IEP. So, there's time dedicated for that. So it's part of the service that we're providing.
I was reading books with this girl, and she's on an accent 1400 with eye gaze, and she was answering all these questions and asking questions about the reading in English, and mom was there, and I chose the book Judy Moody. It was a chapter book that came in English and Spanish, and I just got one, and I said, so I'm going to read this that I read this much today, so read that same section this week in Spanish, because we know the reread is a valid strategy for all literacy, is and including literacy and AAC. And then so then the next week I came, and she's like, oh my gosh, it's daddy daughter time. They read, she kicks the brothers and sisters out, and he's reading in Spanish, and she's like, she goes straight to Spanish and is answering some of the same questions and asking some of the same things in Spanish that she did in English with you earlier in the week. And just because mom witnessed both, she could tell me that, right? And I realized that even something that simple as if we're gonna do a unit on a story, can it be provided in Spanish? Can it be provided in the home language? Can they have a copy of something that in their language? And that she was like, now it's every single night. Every single night, he goes into her room. And even if he's not reading, now he knows that she can use the Spanish side of it. And she says things to him in Spanish. And it was just like a light on kind of thing. Little things like that, again, I was the home-based speech therapist, but even the school could do that, right? We are silent reading time is this, or she chose this book. She chose Harry Potter. Did you know the first books in Spanish if you go to, Bookshare or whatever? That kind of thing. Like, how can we make sure that maybe there's copies of resources that can be done? They jump all over it if I can provide it in Spanish, right? And so that was one where I realized, wow, I need to do a better job at even book selection. Because I want to be sure that they get the benefit of both languages in all of their instruction.
And that's exactly what some of the implementation tips or strategy tips of how do we provide a trans-languaging affirming environment is by doing exactly what you're saying, right? Like you do the Spanish book and the English book, and even though maybe you don't know Spanish, but you've provided it for them to be able to explore. Also, like the different vocabulary, you have vocabulary in English and then the vocabulary in Spanish. There's all these resources now that you can do the maps, right? The AAC maps, and maybe you can send a page of the English motor. How do we get to one word in English, and then how do we get to the word in Spanish? Providing simple little things like that to the family so they are able to explore and see the benefits from it. And you're also setting the environment for that child to maybe like, okay, in English, you read it in English. And maybe her understanding was pretty good, but then now it's read in Spanish, and now her understanding increased because there were certain things that maybe she didn't understand when you were reading it in English. But now that you read it in Spanish, you were like, oh, that makes sense. The comprehension increases, right?
Yeah. Maria, you said that that's a resource that you have that you share. What are some other kind of guiding principles that should be considered when we're working with families that are a culture that's different than your own?
Yeah. So one of the things that I do like to emphasize with families is that sometimes, and this is the first step, right? Like we're monolingual SLPs and we have families who speak the other language, and we're like, okay, I'm going to provide them with handouts on like that other language, right? Spanish handouts. And then you go and you like have this like 10-page thing, and then you give it to them, like of all of the strategies that you've talked about. And then you're like, okay, read it. So we found that like that, and actually some of the research by Soto, I think it was Soto and Yu in 2014, they found that like that's really not helpful when you like have like this manual in Spanish and you're like, okay, here, read the manual. or like, here's the handouts, read the handouts. And then you just like kind of go and do your thing. And you've said, okay, I've provided training, right? I gave them the manual, like I gave them the handouts, training is done. So that's something that actually, something that I found helpful is that for a lot of Spanish speaking families, sometimes we don't even know if they know how to read in Spanish. Sometimes when they're translated, again, like the translation is not perfect. Sometimes it's higher vocabulary that's being used in these handouts. So really sitting down, I'm going to give them a handout because I think handouts are helpful, a helpful guide, but I'm going to dedicate time to go over the handout, maybe show some videos, which I'm sure it's also, you know, training, like training parents one-on-one, like you show some examples, some videos. So along with the handout, I'm going to say, so you see this handout, you know, even if I don't speak the language, I'm at least have the English version so I know what it says, but then I'm also showing examples of what that handout is talking about. So that's one thing of what I've noticed is if you're going to give out handouts, make sure it's simple language and make sure that like maybe you show some videos with it, so families can understand what's going on.
And that's such an easy thing to do for, you know, those who already have a handout and you're like, oh, okay, I need to re-examine that, you know, put a bar, you know, you're going to put your QR code on there and make a date to maybe also invite them in and show them in person.
In person, yeah. If you can, even practice, you know, if you can practice the strategies with the child. I also found like sometimes when I get too stuck with like trying to review all these strategies, like I lose a lot of parents. So kind of building that relationship, you know, especially if you come from a different cultural background, you know, taking the time to learn about your students' background and their culture and the way that they kind of process information and learn. You know, sometimes I found like some parents like to read. Yeah, okay, I'm going to give them a handout. But some parents are like, you know, maybe they don't read. So I'm going to show them a video and I'm going to emphasize more on the video and like maybe doing examples. And also, like I said, like building that relationship with them. So when you are asking them to practice the skills, they have like a sort of relationship with you and they are more willing to do it, right? I've had parents sort of like be so worried because I would say some, like, you know, I spend maybe like the first actually like a month or 2 months just trying to build a relationship with the parent. And even though we're from the same culture background, but I'm like, you know, before I really start to implement the strategies like a lot, I just, you know, try to like get to know them. They like talk to me about like things that have nothing to do with, you know, speech therapy, but I'm there and listen to them. And that's, to me, that's like part of like building this relationship.
Right.
And then when I'm, you know, I've noticed, and then I'm like, okay, so now I'm getting into the strategies. This is what you need to do this week, you know, just practice this and that. And then when I come back, they're like, oh my God, all week I was like, I have to practice because Ms. Maria told me this and that, you know, like to me, that tells me that, you know, they value, you know, the therapy. And because I took the time to like build the relationship with the parent, they're more willing to incorporate the you know, the strategies and things like that. So that'd be another thing, is just taking time to build, you know, rapport with the family.
Definitely.
You know, a lot of immigrants and in other countries, many countries don't require for your child to go to school. You know, like, you know, my family is from Guatemala. And, you know, if you have well off, if you have money, then you do go to elementary school, middle school. And if you have like really good money, then you might go to high school. But, you know, it's not like the United States where it's given that you're going to be an educated person. At least you're going to know how to read and write. Other countries, you know, it's not mandatory. And depending on your economic status, maybe you go to school, maybe you don't. So it's just really tricky when we are giving materials and not reviewing them. Also simplifying the language as much as we can. And we know this also with parents that do know how to read, the term augmentative alternative communication, like tier three words that are like super specific to like our, like, you know, our field. So when you translate that in Spanish, it's the same thing. It's like, you know, what is that word, you know? So just making sure that we kind of simplify the language.
Right. It can be harder because if the culture is perceiving you as an expert, or if you are presenting yourself as an expert, then they may not be even feel comfortable asking a question for clarification, or they don't want to seem like they're questioning you, or they want to provide the respect that they think that you deserve around something. So I think it's also, I feel like asking questions often gets, they don't always ask questions in the beginning, even though they have a ton of them, because they're not sure they're going to ask it right. They don't want it to seem disrespectful. They don't want to seem like they're not intelligent. They don't want to seem like they're not invested. There's a whole bunny, you know, there's a whole many list of things that are being presumed on both sides, right?
A lot of Latino, you know, I could speak for the Latino community, but a lot of like Latino parents, and they definitely have this hierarchy of profession and expertise. So, you know, they know like you're the SLP, you're the professional, and I'm not going to question you, like saying, I'm just, but then it's a double-ended sword because it's like, okay, I'm not going to question you even though I have questions, or I actually don't understand. But they say yes, right? They nod. They say something, they're like, yeah, yeah. And they're nodding, but you know, they don't really understand. So it can be, it's helpful in terms for us because we're like, oh yeah, they're so, you know, they're agreeing. But then, yeah, but then it's like, really, are they really understanding? And actually, this is why I know that when I did my thesis for my graduate studies, which Gloria Soto, she helped me do a manuscript. And then, so actually the article is out now and we published it on the ASHA SIG 12, and it's Latino parents' perspectives and the use of AAC devices for like toddlers. And something that came up in that research was this idea of like parents are very accepting, a lot of Latino parents, especially immigrant parents, they're very accepting to whatever the professionals are saying to them. But then when you check understanding, it seems like, you know, they're not understanding what you just said. So it's really following up, like you were mentioning, with questions, you know, trying to build that rapport so they can feel comfortable asking you the questions, and also providing different resources to make sure like they understand. So that's, you know, to me, I always see it like, even though they have this hierarchy and yeah, you know, I'm the professional, we're still working together. And even the term, and I know Bilingue AAC has talked about this before, but using the terms like training, like we're here to train you, you know, it almost seems like already setting that division, right? Like I'm the trainer, you're the trainee. So you sit down and listen to me, right? So it's already setting that division. So kind of like just reframing the way that we're referring to the services. So collaboration is something that we came up with that we are trying to use a little bit more, like parent collaboration instead of doing training. So,
and kind of assuring them that you're the expert on your child.
Exactly.
I'm bringing the expert on speech and language for sure, but I have to apply it to your child, and you're the expert on that. So that's where that collaboration comes in. And yeah, and kind of reassuring them that one job can't be done without the other.
One thing that I do want, you know, everybody that's listening to get out of this is that you don't have to speak the individual's language to be culturally and linguistically affirming. You know, as simple as doing little tweaks as providing the story in English and Spanish, maybe choosing stories that identify with the children that you are teaching, right? So you know what you have in your caseload, you know, doing a little Google search and like, you know, top, you know, bilingual stories. Also like keeping into account like what the content of the story. Bilingue AAC, the literacy article at Practical AAC, we did give some suggestions of different books.
Oh, great.
We're going to add more books. I kind of talk about the experiences of a bilingual student that don't tend to be the same experiences maybe of like someone that's just monolingual that lives in like, you know, in a, you know, state where everybody speaks only English. It's a little different, right? So there's different stories that represent communities a little bit better. So choosing those type of stories. So that's little things that you can do to be culturally affirming, and you don't have to speak the language. Also, so that would be the main one. It's just like, you know, sometimes I feel like a lot of SLPs And teachers, they get really freaked out when it's like a, you know, this child is bilingual. I have no idea what to do, but you really do, you know, like, 'cause it's not, you know, you do the same thing, but you make sure like you incorporate things from their culture and their language and just be aware, which are ultimately best practices, and you should be doing it with even your monolingual students, because there's things that are different from of them too. So
Right.
right.
Everyone has a culture for sure. Well, I think we could go on and on, but I do want people to look at your resources. From what I've seen, they're amazing. And I keep cranking it out, please. You guys have so much knowledge on how to best do this work. And since many of us are monolingual and serving bilingual students, we'll take all the help we can get.
Our group website, bilingualaac.com, that's where we have also a bunch of handouts that have been translated to Spanish. We have Mandarin, we have Korean, and if you speak another language and you are willing to translate, we can provide the platform. You know, you can translate the documents, and then we provide the platform, and we can download it on our website, and you know, you can direct people there. So
That's awesome.
that's, we have
Great
that.
resource.
We also have a bunch of handouts of like how to do like free handouts of like different activities. So like bubbles, or like, you know, reading time, daily routines, and like sort of giving you examples of, you know, simple sentence phrases, and sort of like you were mentioning, Brenda, like, and then little tips related to Spanish. And this is just, you know, if you really wanted to get into the grammar of it. But ultimately, I think like as long as you are just sort of like accepting it and providing like different resources and like setting an environment, you as a monolingual SLP, you'll find yourself kind of like wanting to learn a little bit and a little bit more and a little bit more. And that's how you become, you know, culturally affirming.
And
Not
I
all at
think
once.
in our documentation,
Not all at once.
our documentation needs to reflect that, meaning not just a standardized score that wasn't standardized on this population, but when you're looking at language samples and when you're looking at the ways that they use both languages, then before you call something a delay, you know, they're like basically using that dynamic assessment piece so that we are, which we're doing with AAC users already. There's no great standardized test for AAC users. So if you're an AAC and bilingual, certainly looking at what can they do in English, what can they do in Spanish, and if you put that all together, where are their language skills? Not they're delayed in English for, in this area, and they're delayed in Spanish in that area. But if they are, if you look at that as multimodality, multimodal, sorry, then you can see the full extent of their language skills.
Exactly. Yeah. And then it
That's
guides you, right, with interventions too. If you
right.
understand where they are in language, then that can guide you with intervention.
For sure.
Maria, thank you so much. It's been
Yeah.
great talking with you. And I think the resources are just going to be mind-blowing to people once they get in there and dig in a little bit more. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank your whole team for putting those together.
Yeah, I know. And we will be presenting too. You know, we do several presentations. We have CASHA. If you're in California, we'll be at CASHA this year. So if you just, you know, if you keep up with our Instagram page, we always post every time something new goes up, then we post it up on our website. We have a great core board that's in English and Spanish. It's bilingual. That one is really nice to use if you don't have, they do, if your student doesn't have an AAC system and you just want to provide that environment and that
Thanks.
accessibility, right? It's just for it to be accessible. We have this core board, which has been a lot of the core words, like we mentioned, the translation is not always fluid between English and Spanish. But Soto and Cooper, they did a research study in 2021 where they looked at English core words and Spanish core words, and then they came up with a list that actually those two overlap. So all of
Okay.
information. It's also on our website, but we created this core board where we included those overlapping core words. So the words that you find in this core board are actually in bilingual, like English and Spanish. Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. Thank you so much for your time, and we appreciate everything. We'll all be checking out your resources. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I know it's a great place to start, I think. So, and this podcast is also great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.